You know those nights when you wake up at 3 in the morning and you start thinking about all the ways you've failed in life? All the things you didn't do, the promises you didn't keep, all the ways you screwed up. It's like the opposite of a bedtime story. Or maybe a bedtime story written by someone who hates you. I'm Anne Strainchamps, and today on To the Best of Our Knowledge, we all have these negative stories we tell ourselves. And the trick is learning how to change them, edit them, because telling a better life story can actually change your life.
I was a freshman in college. I was taking an introductory biology course, and the first big test approached, and in fact, it was the night before, and I was all set to take out my books and study when my roommate said, "Hey, you know, there's this party. Let's go to it." So I went to the party, next day took the test, and was really shocked to get it back a week or so later to see that I had failed it. I was really upset and just terrified that as to, you know, maybe I'm one of those admissions errors you hear about where I didn't really belong in this high-powered college. And so, you know, story number one, this is about me and my lack of ability.
This is Tim Wilson. Today, he's a psychologist who studies the impact of the kinds of stories we tell ourselves, like how to reframe failure when you're a scared college freshman.
Story number two is, you know, I have plenty of ability, but, you know, achievement is about working hard. And the failure on the biology test shouldn't be taken as a sign that I can't do it, but a sign that I needed to work harder. And fortunately, that's the story I arrived at.
In other words, he buckled down, studied his brains out, and aced the next test. So this is the kind of thing self-help books teach, the power of positive thinking, affirmations, gratitude journals. But Tim Wilson is a research psychologist who's come up with a series of lab-tested narrative interventions, story editing techniques for mental health.
Good stories are ones that give us a sense of purpose in life. We feel like we're working towards something and making progress towards it. It's an optimistic story, one that tends to look on the bright side of things. And it's one that we can find some meaning in our experience, that we don't view life as just some random series of events, but we have a good story that can explain why things do happen.
What's a bad story?
Yeah, just the opposite of those. People who are pessimistic don't really see much meaning in their life and don't really have a sense of purpose. I'm reminded of a New Yorker cartoon where a man is crawling up the mountain to visit the guru to find out the meaning of life. And he makes it to the top, and there's the guru sitting there with a T-shirt that says, "Life is a bitch and is meaningless." And that's not a good story.
So this exemplifies this new technique. You call it story editing. Can you explain?
Sure. Well, me and you know, I'm standing on the shoulders of many others who have social psychologists who have used this approach. And what it has in common is an attempt to catch people at a time when they really are unsure about how to interpret an experience. And maybe the way they are interpreting it is in a harmful way to themselves. And just getting them to try to reframe that experience with a little simple intervention. There's a variety of writing exercises that people have come up with.
Boy, you're talking about literally telling your story, writing it down.
Well, exactly. And you know, it's one thing to sit there and ponder it, but there is something about the act of writing that I think really can trigger a reframing of our experiences.
And why is that?
So the psychologist James Pennebaker has come up with this technique where he asks people to think of some traumatic experience that they've had trouble recovering from. And he asks them to write about it typically for about 15 minutes, two or three nights in a row. It's painful. I think one reason we don't do this on our own is it can be upsetting. Often in the beginning, people cry. And often what people do is they start out with very sort of jumbled, you know, disconnected thoughts. But by the end of this, they've reframed their experience more into a coherent narrative that allows them to move beyond it.
Tell me about another exercise. There's one you call the George Bailey exercise.
Yeah. So you mentioned gratitude journals. And, you know, that's actually fairly controversial at this point. There are those who claim that, yes, it can really help to remind ourselves each day to smell the flowers and talk about the things we're thankful for. My reading of that literature is often it doesn't work that well because, you know, we can only thank our lucky stars for our dog so many times before it kind of loses its power. So we came up with this technique where we asked people to think about ways in which a really treasured person or experience might not have occurred. So in one study, for example, we asked people who were in long-term romantic relationships. One group was the gratitude group. We just said, you know, tell us the story of how you met and why you're thankful for that. And that actually had very little effect on people's happiness. But in our George Bailey condition, it was, you know, kind of like the movie where the angel shows you what your life would have been like if you hadn't existed. In this case, we said, you know, tell us what your life would have been like if you had not met your romantic partner. Think about if you hadn't gone to that party where you met them, or if your first date was a disaster and hadn't worked out. You know, it's kind of paradoxical, but thinking about that negative part of it made people more grateful for what they have and increase their happiness. Well, it reminded them of how special it was what they had, and you don't take it for granted as much. You think, wow, you know, it's true. I might not have gone to that party and met my future wife. That's scary, but it really makes my current relationship seem more special.
Sort of like, wow, I didn't realize it, but I won the lottery. You know, as though we're all walking through life not realizing that we've already won the lottery in so many different ways.
That's a really good way to put it, yeah.
It's funny, I was my father-in-law some years ago when he retired began writing life history. And one of the things he discovered at the end of the whole thing that fascinated him and me was all the points in his life that he thought had been mistakes or setbacks or wrong turns led to something that he really valued in his life that wouldn't have happened otherwise.
And, you know, to be honest, it doesn't really matter whether that's true or not. What really matters is he came to believe that, and it gave more meaning to the way his life did turn out.
You know, it seems to me that one of the assumptions you're making is that it's possible for us to be in control of our life story, but most of the time, that's not how life feels. I walk through a great deal of my life worried and thinking there's a good chance I'm not going to be good enough at something. I don't think of that as a story. That's just my life.
Well, yes. And you know, to be fair, I don't want to oversell this. I don't want to claim that, you know, starting tomorrow morning, your listeners can completely change their life stories. And, you know, there's another writing exercise that I think can be helpful, and that's to write about ourselves from a third-person perspective, as if we are observing ourselves and telling the story that someone else might tell about us. And if you really take that step back and say, look, you know, think in the past about something you were really worried about and imagine an objective observer saying, yeah, you know, that was ridiculous. There was no reason to be worried about that. And that can actually help revise our own stories.
And if you really want to get novelistic about it, you could create all kinds of characters in your mind, and each of them could write your life story. So you can see it from multiple perspectives.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that. In my book, Redirect, I talk about some authors who claim that they changed their lives by writing novels, that the characters they created often were ways to, they were versions, better versions of themselves. And by really developing these characters, they began to view themselves differently.
Is there also an element here of self-fulfilling prophecy? I'm thinking of the kind of new agey or self-help kind of affirmation, we create our own reality. You know, if you tell a different story, interpret yourself and how you are in the world differently, maybe different things will happen to you.
the one thing I would say to separate myself from the New Agey kind of approach is actually, I do think it's something important to add, that all of these techniques have been really vetted well by good experiments. That you know, I'm a research psychologist, and I really believe strongly in good scientific tests of these approaches. And that's one thing about the self-help industry is, you know, there's a million books that tell you what to do, but very few of them have been actually tested to see if they work. But, you know, but you're right. The message is somewhat the same of we do create our own realities to some extent, and that's what determines how happy we are. Now, you know, obviously those stories have to be tied to reality to some extent. You know, we can't live in a complete fantasy world.
So I'm going to go way out on a limb and ask you kind of a wild card question. But this is something I think about as a journalist. There's also a national narrative, a collective narrative, and journalists are a big part of that. We all read dozens of stories every day in the news, and particularly during this election season, for instance, you can see this playing out. And often the stories are really negative. How might a country change its collective narrative? Could it?
Well, wow, that is a big question, and I wish I had an easy answer to it. You know, how those stories get spun and perpetuated in this age of social media is fascinating. And, it, you know, I do think it is a way that social media can really have a big influence. So, you know, just recently there was a writer who, in reaction to Donald Trump, asked her Twitter followers to respond with instances where they had been sexually abused. And the response was amazing. There were, you know, millions of women were responding, and up to 50 a minute. And I think that really helped change the narrative for people who didn't believe this was real or, you know, an incredible problem in our society. So, you know, often these things spin out of control, and I don't have a good answer to you as to how to change it, but I do think social media can play a role.
Makes me want to be really careful about what I post on Facebook.
Well, yes.
Maybe we all should be.
Yeah.
Tim Wilson is a psychologist at the University of Virginia. His book is called Redirect: The Surprising New Science of Psychological Change.